Today, we have two very special guests on our program, introducing Lem and Lime.
Hello.
For Starry Lemon Lime Soda.
Thanks for having us.
What is Starry Lemon Lime Soda?
It's a crisp, clear burst of lemon lime flavor, and it's caffeine-free.
Between us, one of you must be a little more important to Starry than the other. Who is it?
We're both important.
So we could just as easily be Starry Lime Lemon Soda.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Oh, I like it.
So you saying hip-hop could be hop-hip?
Works for me.
Starry Lemon Lime Soda. Starry hits different.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
You are listening to The Hard Shoulder, coming to you live from Fitzpatrick's Hotel in Manhattan, in New York City. All eyes here, all eyes around the world on the result of the US presidential election, which came through in dribs and drabs overnight. I'm sure many of you would have woken up to the news this morning that Donald Trump had indeed been elected president, effectively elected president. I mean, before it was a fact, he gave his victory speech. Here is a little bit of it.
Frankly, this was, I believe, the greatest political movement of all time. There's never been anything like this in this country, and maybe beyond. And now it's going to reach a new level of importance because we're going to help our country heal. We're going to help our country heal. We have a country that needs help, and it needs help very badly. We're going to fix our borders. We're going to fix everything about our country. And we made history for a reason tonight, and the reason is going to be just that. We overcame obstacles that nobody thought possible, and it is now clear that we've achieved the most incredible political thing. Look what happened. Is this crazy? But it's a political victory that our country has never seen before, nothing like this. I want to thank the American people for the extraordinary honor of being elected your 47th president and your 45th president. And to every citizen, I will fight for you, for your family, and your future. Every single day, I will be fighting for you, and with every breath in my body, I will not rest until we have delivered the strong, safe, and prosperous America that our children deserve and that you deserve. This will truly be the golden age of America. That's what we have to have. This is a magnificent victory for the American people that will allow us to make America great again. Oh.
Yes, that was the president-elect speaking in Mar-a-Lago. I was going to say last night. I've kind of lost track of time. I think it was early this morning. It was about 2:30 New York time, Eastern time here. It was about 7:30 in the morning for everybody listening at home. I mean, that was only a short snippet of the speech. It went on and on and on. At one stage, he was talking about the paint job on Elon Musk's SpaceX rockets and how they're unable or unable to withstand the kind of heat of reality. Anyway, kind of the usual bonkers stuff. The bonkers stuff we're all going to be listening to for 4 years. Martin Nutting and John Lee are back with me here in Fitzpatrick. They are the hosts of the Irish Jew podcast and Shelley Ann Quilty Lake, the attorney from Wexford originally as well, between Wexford and Rosslare, as she told us the last time she was here. You're all very welcome and thanks a million for coming back to us. Was it a late night, Shelley?
It was indeed. I was with friends of mine who I'd mentioned the other day, who I've written postcards with, in support of Kamala Harris and Democrats down the ticket in multiple swing states. I stayed out in Brooklyn until about midnight, then went back to Queens and stayed up till about 2:15. Went to bed and hoped that everything would be okay and the blue wall would save us, but it did not.
So how then do you make sense of what happened last night?
Well, I was proven wrong. I was optimistic the other day. I believed that the American people were sick and tired of the chaos, of the division, of the derision, of the misogyny and the racism and the lies. But I was wrong. The only way I can make sense of it is that the American people do not want their democratic republic to survive. They gave the three branches over to Trump. American democracy is done, and America's role in the world is also over. So God bless and God help the Palestinians and Ukrainians, because Trump and the Republicans won that.
Martin, how do you interpret?
Well, I think I'll start first of all and say I was disappointed with the outcome, which I don't think will be a surprise to anybody that was listening to us the other day. I think fundamentally what we're seeing is an electorate that is looking backwards to a moment before COVID started, when everybody was feeling a little bit fat and happy as Donald Trump and his administration were spending a lot of money to kind of juice the expectations, let's say, of the electorate at that time. And a lot of folks are thinking, I want a bit of that before there was any inflation. So most Americans want the American dream. And the American dream is basically, I will do better than the generation that came before me. The sad truth, of course, is that we are now facing rule by oligarchy, so to speak. So the fact that Elon Musk was up on the stage last night with Donald Trump and a variety of other millionaires and billionaires will tell you exactly what is going to happen going forward. And believe you me, our middle American friends that have entrusted the fate of the Republic in Donald Trump's hands will not benefit from a set of policies that is going to lift them and elevate them.
John, can I put a text to you? This came in from Mike Ryan in Dublin 18. Mike often gets in touch with us, and he says that there's going to be all sorts of postmortems trying to figure out why Trump won. Sometimes it can be straightforward. In elections, good candidates win regardless of the cards. Harris is many things, but she's proven now on a number of occasions she's not a good election candidate. Democrats have only themselves to blame for failing the first test of the political party. Pick the right candidate, and now the rest of us have to suffer for 4 years. Do you think Mike is on to something?
I don't agree with Mike. I mean, ultimately, the election determines who the better candidate was or the better campaign. But, you know, Kamala Harris came into this with strong disadvantages. She really wasn't that well known. She didn't distinguish herself as a vice president, which very few people are able to do. She was saddled with the border issue, which the Democrats did not successfully address, but it's a global issue. It's not just an American issue. And she jumped in at the last minute to take this thing over and did an extraordinary job with the convention, decimated Trump in the debate, got stronger and stronger in her events. You know, I used to work in racing, and there's an expression, you know, she ran out of track. You know, the finish line was coming up too soon. Whether anything would have changed a month from now, if the election was a month from now, I don't know. But I think she was a good candidate. I think she ran a good campaign. The country has some different ideas, unfortunately. I was wrong. Many other people were, too.
Shelley, do you think she was a good candidate?
I think she was. I think she was. And I've thought about that in terms of I really can't. Here was my concern with respect to the Democrats. I thought that the uncommitted vote would cost the Democrats potentially. Basically, those who would sit out voting because of, say, her position or not taking a firm enough position with respect to Gaza. But that didn't cost her. I think she was a fantastic candidate. I think it's just that the American people really were for Trump, and it didn't matter who the Democrats put up against him. He was going to win. His vision was what the American people wanted, which is very devastating to.
How, Martin, do you describe that vision? Like, what is it about what Donald Trump had to say that resonated with people?
Well, there is the economic part, which we've already discussed, but I also think there is the fear and anger and rage politics that Donald Trump has brought to the fore. Now, the sad reality of this is most of this revolves around border politics, but it also, as I mentioned the other day, is directed at the LGBTQI community. The truth of the matter is, and talking about Kamala and her challenges with the border, is Donald Trump doesn't really have any solution for border, but it is a useful cudgel to beat his political opponents with, because one of the most disturbing aspects of this election, from my perspective, is the biggest thing, which Bernie Sanders mentioned 8 years ago when he was running, is actually global warming. There's a reason why people are massing on the southern borders, and it has a lot to do with climate change. And guess what? We now have a president that doesn't believe anything about climate change. And so now the border problems are going to be increased and exacerbated. He's claimed that he's built a beautiful and big wall. But guess what? People are still going to keep coming in, because if you are starving, if you are hungry, if you can no longer farm anymore in the global south, you're going to keep coming, just as it happens in Europe. So climate change is going to get bigger and bigger, and President Trump and his ilk can deny that that's happening. But that is just a reality going forward.
John, what's the natural consequence if that pans out as Martin describes that? Because somebody else actually texted in, I think it was John in Limerick earlier, making kind of a similar point broadly. He said he's not going to be able to deliver on what he's promised and wait until that penny drops. When that penny drops, or when Donald Trump realizes the penny drops and I can't, you know, seal the southern border as he would have said he was going to do, what then does he do? Who does he kind of point to?
You know, he really didn't come in with any plans of anything that I could tell. He had the concept of a plan. You remember that quote from the debate? I think he just kind of does the weave for the next 4 years. Every week was infrastructure week in the last administration. I think in the election, people don't grab on to subtle arguments. And Trump very clearly could grab the most basic idea and build a campaign around it. You know, the price of bacon, the price of eggs. No subtlety about, well, the entire world was going through inflation coming out of the pandemic, that the U.S. handled it vastly better than anyone else. And I fault the Democrats a bit for not making the Biden economic point of, you know, like, things are in place that are going to change this country as far as the Infrastructure Act. But they backed off from that economic argument. But subtle arguments don't seem to work.
Martin, can you make sense of how, or maybe you might kind of reject the premise of the question, but I'll stick with it anyway, how the Democrats seem to have lost those, what were they called, the Reagan Democrats back in the day, the kind of the blue-collar workers who liked the sound of what Ronald Reagan was saying. I'm not a Republican, but I think this guy is kind of speaking for me. And you kind of get the sense in speaking to kind of, you know, union workers who I've been speaking to here over the last few days, who say, yeah, my union's for Kamala, but myself and my colleagues, we're for Trump.
Well, I think what you've seen is an evolution of the Republican Party under Trump. It is now the Trumpist Party. And what distinguishes it from the old Republican Party is essentially the death of neoliberalism within the Republican Party. So this kind of global economics, we can move labor offshore, et cetera, right? To its credit, Trump has identified that as a significant problem. The problem is, of course, he has actually no solution and will not deliver a solution. All he'll do is perpetrate it or continue it on and line the pockets of his billionaire friends. He's not going to solve that problem. Now, the other side of the ledger is the Democratic Party. Have they actually recognized that neoliberalism is dead as a philosophy that's dominated for the last 40 years? And I don't think they have, but I think they will now. Because my guess is that they will have to evolve into a true party of the left going forward.
What does that look like, Shelley? I mean, who do you look at? Say at a kind of big national level that an Irish audience might be kind of some kind of recognition value of. Who might lead the Democratic Party in that direction?
That's a very good question. The DNC had a lot of superstars. And so there's many to choose from. It's difficult at this juncture to identify like a specific person to lead the way. But following on from Martin's point, though, what is galling about the outcome of this election, and you were saying about Reagan Republicans and blue-collar workers and union workers, like Kamala Harris, she did, even though she had a very short campaign, she did put out a lot of policies, and she was very effective, both she was and her surrogates, in communicating, this is how we're going to make a difference in your life, the middle class. They're the most pro-union administration, the Biden and Harris one, and she was going to continue in that trajectory and also take care of issues that were of concern to the middle class. Affordable housing, tax breaks, childcare, and so forth.
But to kind of use her own language against her, like, people don't vote most people don't vote kind of based on the content of policy documents. It's the vibe.
It's the vibe.
And the vibe that those blue-collar workers had was, yeah, that guy might be a billionaire, but I kind of think he speaks for me more than that person.
No, exactly. And about a month or so ago, I was talking to this elderly gentleman who was watering flowers outside of a pizza place in Queens. And I was admiring his work. And he said to me, you'd want to be careful if that woman gets into power. She's a socialist. And I said, I like her and so am I. But then we were talking about law and order, and he was perceiving Trump as a law and order candidate. And that's irreconcilable because, like, she's a former DA. She was, you know, the Attorney General. He's a felon. He knows the law well because he's violated so many of them.
Yeah.
But like you say, policies and one's track record don't matter. But who is going to carry the mantle for the Democrats? I'm not exactly sure.
John has his hand up. John. I like that. Love is Lewis, like the good boy in class.
No, I think the most effective national voice for the Democrats, whether he's a presidential candidate or just the voice of the direction, is Pete Buttigieg. He has been an extraordinary debater. He goes into the belly of the beast at Fox News and has very effective conversations. I think he's the sharpest guy out there.
Martin?
I'll second John. I think Pete Buttigieg is an extraordinary
guy. And has he still got the profile? I mean, for kind of Gavin Newsom and these other people have kind of maybe sucked up a bit more oxygen in the room over the last couple of years.
This election cycle, Pete's been out there. He's been on Fox News. He's been very effective.
Yeah, and he's a young guy. He's still, you know, in his early 40s. He's an extraordinary communicator. He's a brilliant guy. He has a wonderful profile. He's a Gulf War veteran, and he also happens to be a gay man with a husband, so maybe he'll be in touch with Leo Varadkar to get a little bit of advice on, you know, how to navigate that.
All of that aspect of it as well. So, Shelley, you kind of struck a very despondent note at the start, kind of the end of the Republic.
Yeah.
And, John, you talked about enduring 4 years of the weave. You know, the weave will be all over the place, kind of 4 years of chaos in terms of kind of policy and implementation. So, Martin, I'll wrap with you. I mean, in 4 years' time, what's the country going to look like?
Well, I think what we have barreling down on us, unfortunately, is Project 2025, courtesy of the Heritage Foundation. So we know that there is a blueprint already in place. It really depends on the degree of control that the Republican Party gets. It's clear that they have a majority in the Senate. They don't have a filibuster-proof majority, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the filibuster eliminated. Personally, even though that goes against what I would like, I think ultimately it actually might be a good thing to get rid of the filibuster, because American politics is sclerotic. We need to make things happen faster. We need to make things happen quicker. What will happen is the Republican Party will break things badly, and that reality will come barreling down upon the American public, and that will create, I believe, a space for Pete Buttigieg to be the next president of the United States.
All right, put your money on it, folks. You heard it here
right
first.
So far.
I'd love to see America vote for a gay man, but I don't think so.
Martin Nutty and John Lee are co-hosts of the Irish Stew podcast. Shelley Ann Quilty Lake is an attorney based here originally from Wexford. Listen, folks, thanks a million again.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.